I'm Joe Partavilla, and you are listening to the Forbes Books Podcast. And serial entrepreneurs are a fascinating breed. We all know starting and running a successful company is really hard, but to do it over and over again seems almost impossible. And when it comes to scaling, how can you scale all of those businesses for growth? Well, my guest this week has unlocked the key to scalability and is on a mission to show other entrepreneurs how to enhance their lives by demonstrating how to improve every single day. Oh, and he's got the receipts to prove it. He's founded over 30 businesses and employs over 400 people across several verticals. His name is Tony DiSilvestro. Tony, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Joe. Thanks a lot, bud. So excited to be here today.
Yeah, you know, I'm excited too, Tony, because, you know, I speak to a lot of entrepreneurs and I read up on entrepreneurship, and it's always about starting a business. But it seems like your focus, you've gone a little downfield a little bit because you're all about building and scaling a company from where it was. Why did that become such a big part of the focus of your career as opposed to being like, hey, here's how you start a company? Yours is like, here's how you grow your company.
Yeah, my thing is about entrepreneur winning, you know. So for me, over the years, opening so many businesses, what I found was over, like, for a business to make it 15 years, only 25% of companies make it that far. And, you know, it was funny, last night I was looking at a stat and I'm like, God, how many businesses do over $1 million a year? And it's like 94% of businesses don't even hit $1 million a year. Wow. Then I'm like, heck, let's check this out. Let's look at what's 10 million a year in business. Less than 1% of companies make it to 10 million. But why is that, Joe? So what I did is my passion was driven to help entrepreneurs win every day. So how do you help them scale? So that's what I really focused on, was business fundamentals. Look at that blueprint. Take your business back to the first day you open your doors, and let's look at how we grow your brand.
So what's the difference for the uninitiated? What's the difference from giving birth to a company to growing a company? Is it like a child where, like, it's really hard to give birth, but then it gets really more complicated, more nuanced as they grow older?
You know, like we all, most people start businesses as technicians, right? We're good at something we do. We, you know, hey, you're the best pizza man, or you're a great framer, or, you know, you went to engineering school and you said, hey, I can build my own engineering school. But the thing is, they're technicians. They're not entrepreneurs. There's nothing wrong. I love the fact that most people are business owners, but how do you cross over into entrepreneurship? That's when you start working on your business instead of in it. That's how you teach people how to scale. But most business owners are technicians, so they don't actually have a coach or a mentor to help them become an entrepreneur.
And why do you think that part of it is, like, the entrepreneur part of it is the tricky part for these folks? Because obviously they're talented. They have this either one particular set of skills or others. But why do you think that entrepreneurship thing is something that's a little trickier for these folks?
Because really, to become an entrepreneur, it's either you have to go through a lot of pain and struggling and lose, right? Because that's where I've learned a lot of what I've done in life and business, is I've had my losses. But the problem is, most entrepreneurs or business owners at this point don't have that opportunity, or don't have that mentor in their life, or somebody to say, hey, step back, man, you're killing yourself. You're not working on your business. You're so deep in your business, you can't even see past the trees. And, like, I always talk about, like, you know, seeing the forest through the trees, and I teach entrepreneurs that way, and they start to get it. But gosh, man, I wish I would have had that person, you know, 20 years ago when I was a young man in the business. But because I was working 100 hours a week, and you would have told me, hey, you're not doing business right, I would have told you you're crazy. I'm like, I'm working 100 hours a week. I'm the best at what I do.
So it was almost like the work smarter, not harder thing, which you were doing the opposite, it sounds like.
100%. You know, my stepfather as a kid used to tell me, he goes, you'll be successful when you use your brain, not your hands. And, you know, as a kid, I never really understood what he meant, but hell, did I understand later in life. I really did.
And when did you realize the importance of mentorship and having that sort of Yoda figure in your life? Because it sounds like at first you didn't have that, but discovered it along the way.
You know, it kind of happened to me, Joe, when I was going through, like, all of a sudden business owners, I started to be pretty successful in town, pretty well known, and business owners were coming in and say, hey, can you help me with their business? So it was about 15 years ago, I started really mentoring other companies, and then it started looking this, like, I started having great results with some of these people, and they were like, oh my God, you changed my business. You changed the name of my company. My company is more focused now. So it really started to look at that, and I started to really understand that how I could actually help entrepreneurs all over the world.
Hmm. And you have a lot of experience in the restaurant business, working in food in the great state of our homeland of New Jersey. But and you know what's sad, and obviously we saw a lot of this during the pandemic, but it hasn't stopped. restaurants closing left or right. I live most of the time down in Charleston, and it seems like every week a restaurant or cafe that's been here for decades is shuttering. What's going on in the restaurant industry today? Now that we've gotten past the pandemic, why are restaurant owners still having difficulty keeping their doors open?
You know, it's interesting, like the recession, and this isn't any business. I mean, I'm in construction. I mean, I'm in multiple businesses. My restaurants, though, it's interesting. You know, we went through COVID and it was painful. We didn't have employees. We shut our doors. They closed our restaurants. But then all of a sudden you get out of COVID. Everybody's like, oh, great, COVID's over. But then the commodity prices went through the roof. Gas prices went through the roof. And a lot of business owners, you know, they got that PPP from the government, but they went out and they bought cars, they remodeled their houses. They didn't invest back into their companies, right? Go back to that foundation and build your company. So, you know, if you have to, if you can pivot in the restaurant business, you know, being proactive and really looking at your expenses, you know, when you're preparing for a recession, and this is where I talk about, you know, being having losses in my business. I've been through four recessions. You know, so I was kind of already prepared to work through this, but most companies out there have never seen this. So they don't even know what's it's expected. I'm already working 2 years down the road every day when I run my businesses. I'm always looking forward. And, you know, having that knowledge and that wisdom in the from the past has made a huge difference for me. But even in my local town, we have 12 restaurant auctions this week alone. So if you're not preparing for the recession, if you're not taking that step back, looking at what I joke all the time, Joe, I say, do you know what a price of a foot of paper towels is coming out of your bathroom? I said, we go that granular in every expense that we have in our company. And then the other piece, Joe, real quick, is investing in your employees. You know, employees right now have so much fatigue. They come to work. They haven't worked in months, years. And so it's really taking your employees and understanding how to show them growth and where what is their upper mobility? How can they be successful working for you? It's a whole different world. When I was a kid, if I asked the boss why, I knew his shoe size pretty well.
And you know what's amazing about the restaurant industry as a whole nowadays in 2022, Tony, is something that I never saw during the course of my life of over 40 years on this planet is restaurants unable to fill positions, restaurants being closed on certain days because they don't have enough employees. What's going on there? Why is that happening?
You know, they had a lot of government assistance, so people saved a lot of money. I mean, I think like 4 months ago, there was $2 trillion in savings. You know, personal savings, the highest ever in the history of our country. But as prices and everything started going up, people were still not going out to work. They didn't want to work, right? They changed positions. They think they can work from home. They start an internet job or a company on the internet. But what's crazy is the last 3 weeks, Joe, people are actually starting to come back to work. We're starting to get some high-level people. My headhunters called me this week. I'm like, I don't know what's going on. But the last 2 weeks, everybody, I have more applicants than I've ever had in 2 years.
Interesting.
So I think it's about money running out right now. I think you go to the grocery store, you're paying 20 to 30% more for your groceries. You're paying, you know, $2 to $3 more per gallon of gas. I think it's starting to hit home quick, and I think we're in for a rude awakening. But as business owners, you need to prepare for that. I mean, so, you know, it's going to thin the herd, and I can't stand when businesses close, like I said. But, man, it's definitely helping the employment situation, but it's really sad watching businesses close. It's what they've saved for their entire lives, and they're losing their businesses basically because they're not going back to those fundamentals, or they weren't being diligent with their expenses and understanding how to run labor costs, how to run food costs. Like prime cost is in a lot of businesses, right? What do your employees cost you versus your product? What is that prime cost? Are you focused on every day? Do you know your numbers?
And do you think that's a problem because most people don't want to get into the weeds like that? Because you describing it, you make it sound so easy, but I'm sure it's harder than it actually is. Do you think some people are like, hey, I run this business, I make X or Y product, I sell X or Y product, and I hire X or Y employees to do this? But they don't want to look into the like the granular data of it. Do you think that's, in essence, why a lot of businesses fail, regardless of industry?
You know, general contracting and business, and like you said, all businesses, but it's really, you know, that's when I say surround yourself with greatness, right? If don't try and be the accountant. Don't try and be the lawyer. Like I tell these businesses, they're doing their books, they're doing their payroll. I'm like, what is that costing you? What could you be doing with that time? General contracting is one of the highest failure rates in the country because every framer, every you know guy that works in construction, trim guy thinks they can be a business owner. But the problem is you have to have business acumen to be able to run a business efficiently. You have to be able to know who to hire. Do you have the right account? Do they understand construction? Can they help you with trends and watching trends? Are you studying like economic times, I mean, I study everything, Joe. I'm all over the economy. I'm looking at China right now, hardcore, looking at the situation in Taiwan, what's going on in this country. You have to be looking at interest rates, looking at banking, financing. So for me, business owners don't want to get into that mud. And like you said, because they're technicians, they say, I'm great. And as long as I work hard and I frame every day and I get up and I go to work every day, I'm going to be great. But it's too many variables that just doesn't work.
And you know, it's funny, Tony, I've been building a house down here in Charleston, and it's my first time experiencing small business owners face to face. Like, you always hear about, like, hey, let's help small businesses. And one thing that I've come to learn during my process of doing this is the reason a lot of small business owners fail is because they're bad at being small business owners. Like, I'll meet somebody who goes like, yeah, I'll be able to get to this probably by, you know, January. I'm like, January? It's September. Why do I have to wait till January? Like, why do you think these small businesses feel like they can treat people so poorly? Because I feel like that's the, and I don't know if it's just maybe anecdotal on my end, but I feel like a lot of small business owners I'm running into nowadays, their people skills are not great. And talk to me about that sort of it. We were talking about the technical stuff. Let's talk about the soft skills of being a small business owner.
You know, it's all about customer experience, right? So the one thing people don't realize is that we're all in the same exact business. We're in the 98.6 degree business, right? We're in the people business. And so many business owners don't think, they think they're just providing a service, but they actually don't realize their job is to create an experience. When I go to a job, a construction site, and I walk into somebody's house, I'm not just doing a remodel in somebody's house. This is where they live. This is their home. They're going to spend the rest of their life. They're going to have coffee every morning at that kitchen table, and I'm redoing all the windows at that kitchen table. Is the sun hitting them in the face? What does it look like? I think about the end result, and so many business owners are thinking about how much profit am I making. They don't think about the experience they're creating, and I don't care what business you're in, Joe. When I mentor architecture firms, I do that same exact thing. Are you building? You're not building a house. You're building somebody's home. You're designing somebody's home. And I think so many small businesses, like, they get into business and they go into business for profit. And the one thing that makes me crazy when I'm talking to people that want to be entrepreneurs, they want to open a business. And I'm like, why do you want to open a business? And they're like, oh, I want to be rich. So whenever I hear that, I'm like, don't even bother. Don't go in business, because that's not going to happen. If you focus on money and not growth, I am such a growth-focused person, not profit-focused. Obviously, profit is what keeps my business running, keeps me growing, keeps me scaling. But if I focus on growth, my entire life I've focused on growth, and that has helped me sustain and scale my businesses for 30-some years now.
I had this funny experience, Tony. We had a landscaper come over because we wanted to put like a little patio in our backyard. And my wife and I were first-time homeowners. And so we don't know how much anything costs. So before the guy came to visit and give us a quote, they kept asking, hey, so make sure you have in mind what your budget is. And I'm like, I don't know what my budget is because I don't know how much a patio costs. So the guy shows up. And before he walks in the door, me and my wife say, hey, what should we say? Because they're going to ask us again what our budget is. And I'm like, let's just throw out a number like $5,000. Because the one thing, Tony, when you're doing something for the first time, you always feel like someone's going to have one up on you. They're going to try to scam you or take advantage of you. So we'd say, you know, let's go in low. Let's just say $5,000, just because we have no idea how much it's going to cost. So the guy walks in and he goes like, first question. It's not like, hello, and then, so tell me what your budget is. Again, the people skills.
He's worried about profit, baby.
Yeah, that's all he's worried about. So all of a sudden, my wife goes, oh, you know, we're probably, you know, thinking around $5,000. He had papers in his hands, Tony. He threw the papers in the air. Like, what do you mean $5,000? You can't do a patio in this area for less than $20,000. Do you guys even have enough money for a patio? And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. Slow your roll, brother. We have no idea how much a patio costs. You tell us how much it is, not what we're willing to pay. How much is, you know, when you go to a car dealership, the sticker prices are on the car, so you know what a car goes for. There's no way to know what a patio goes for. And I was so, it was such a sickening feeling, because first of all, they make you feel less than a person. And then after all is said and done, he sends us a quote 2 weeks later, Tony, for nothing we asked for. He basically just copy and pasted a quote from another job, like, you know, a retaining wall, an irrigation, and we didn't want any of this stuff, and he just sent it off. And as you can imagine, Tony, we did not select his company to go for our patio. So, and I feel like I've seen a lot of that recently, where people just are the man. They just, if you just treat people better, I think you have a better chance of surviving in business.
There's no doubt. It's like the, I call it the employee avatar and the customer avatar, right? It's just as important that you take that customer avatar and you actually understand who they are. So you know what the expectation of your employee avatar has to be. So my employees in one of my companies, one of my three pillars of my brand is family. So I have to hire employees that understand what it is to treat children properly. If I say I hire a server in one of my restaurants and they don't like kids, then I created the wrong experience for the customer and also my employee, because you're never going to get the result you want. So customer service to me is critically important. And I don't even like calling it customer service, Joe. I call it experience creators. Everybody I hire is an experience creator. When I hire contractors, when they go on a job, I make sure my contractors look a certain way. Their shirts are tucked in, they're in uniform. They don't look like slobs because they're going into somebody's house that they're building. Typically, I build million-dollar homes and up, Joe. So when I do that, I have to think about how that customer is going to be, you know, treated. But if I'm building track homes or flip homes or whatever I'm doing, Joe, I don't care what my guys are working. The customer's never there. So that customer experience, if you understand what it is to create an experience at any given business that you're in, then you start to actually be able to create results, because customer experience to me is what's made me successful over 30 years now. And because I've always cared with the vision and what was the customer's expectation. So treating people the right way is baseline. That's the bottom floor. That's the bottom of your building.
Yeah. And as for someone who doesn't do this, it seems like those soft skills are the easiest part of being a business owner, but it turns out they're not. I guess they're not, right, Tony? Because
not at all.
Yeah, because to me, it's like, oh man, if I owned a restaurant, I would just be like super nice to people, or if I owned a business, I'd be really nice, because I expect, you know, I'm a big fan of the golden rule, Tony, as you know, treat people as you want to be treated yourself. So I just don't realize that those soft skills are a little harder than people make them out to be.
Well, you know, those soft skills are easy when everything's going right. It's when they're going wrong. Conflict resolution's critically important to everything. How well do you handle conflict? And here's the key part. When I talk to entrepreneurs and I talk to business owners, I'm like, if you can't handle conflicts properly, then find somebody in your company that can. Find that person that has that soft skill. Because as a business owner, you may be a great technician, you may be great at what you do. That doesn't mean that you have great people skills. But so I always surround myself with the right people. Even as I've gotten older in business, Joe, I don't handle as many customer complaints because I know I don't have the patience anymore, because I'm crazy passionate about everything I do. So sometimes my passion even comes across as being maybe abrupt or rude. And that's not my intention at all. I mean, I've got a bad story, Joe. Like, somebody came into one of my restaurants one time and said, is this, you're saying this is ahi tuna? And I'm like, it is ahi tuna. This, like, I spent so much money on this tuna. And the customer's like, this is the worst tuna. It's not ahi. You shouldn't be advertising this. So I took a raw piece of tuna out in the dining room one time. And I said, does this look like raw, like bad tuna?
Oh, man.
And at that point, I realized I probably don't need to be handling as many customer complaints.
That's so funny. I wonder how that Google review looked like afterwards.
They said I'm crazy passionate or something, I'm sure. Thank God it was like 15 years ago and reviews weren't as popular.
That's funny. You mentioned earlier the fact that you've gone through four recessions, and people like to talk about we're in a recession now, but we are not, as you know, Tony. We're heading there. What did you learn through those first four recessions in all the multiple businesses that you had that is going to prepare you for this next one?
You know, it's interesting, Joe, like when you talk about it, like, you know, in 2008, right before that, in 2006 and 7, we were crushing it, man. It was unbelievable. We were having great sales, great profitability. And bang, 2008 comes and you're starting to like, holy mackerel, we could lose our businesses and a couple of our businesses. But then, you know, you go through that and you say, gosh, I have to streamline. So then when all of a sudden 2017, 18, we're fat on the hog, we're doing unbelievable profits through the roof, you're not focused on the granular pieces. So what I like to tell everybody, like, I've been preparing for this recession for almost 2 years. I'm like, we've been streamlining every expense throughout our entire company. So if you have a business or you're out there trying to make it work every day and you're concerned, just go back to your fundamentals. Look at every contract that's in your business, every purchase agreement, look at your employees, reinvest in your employees. I tell people all the time, stop hiring employees. Do not hire. If you're investing in your employees, then you'll be successful. So go back to the business fundamentals, right? Look at every contract, look at every expense, look at what you're paying your employees. Are they cross-trained? Are you cross-utilizing every employee that you have to be able to be efficient with your labor costs? Because the thing is, employees want to work. They want to do a good job. but they also want to be appreciated every day when they're working. Shake their hands. Every day when I leave any one of my companies, I shake every employee's hand and thank them for what they're doing. But it's really going back to those basic fundamentals, Joe. I'll say it again. When I go in and I coach and I mentor, I'm always going back to those pure fundamentals. But as all businesses, when we're busy and profits flowing, you start to lose track of some of the basic fundamentals.
Wow. And, you know, talking about some of your businesses, you know, I mentioned earlier, we're both Jersey guys, but in the 90s, you made the jump to Virginia Beach. So you were doing the mass migration way before it was cool. what took you down to coastal Virginia to start businesses? Can you go back in time a little bit and tell me how that all went down?
Yeah, I grew up at the Jersey Shore. I was down in Wildwood Crest, New Jersey, and loved the beach. I was a block and a half from the beach as a kid, moved up by Manhattan to make the story a little shorter, and then got sick of waking up to 2 foot of snow in the morning and decided my brother had moved down to Virginia Beach before me, and I said, I'm out of here. I couldn't take it anymore, so I wanted to be back by the beach. But Virginia Beach has been amazing. It's a great coastal town. But, you know, as the Jersey Shore, there's no economy on the oceanfront. Where Virginia Beach is 1.8 million people in Hampton Roads. And so we have an enormous economy. 52% of our economy is military, so it's a very stable market for us, and it's been a great place to own a business. But it's very interesting being in Hampton Roads. 70% of our market transitions every year. So for marketing purposes, it's kept me right on my toes because I'm always having 18% of my market, 17%, 18% of my market's flipping. So you're having to create new. It's not like Mayberry where you're serving the same customers for 60 years. And I know I'm probably dating myself saying Mayberry. Nobody knows what the hell that is. But
Google it.
Exactly. I'm not in this little town where you serve the same customers for 40 years. 18% of my market flips every year, so I'm always trying new products. It's like a great test market down here.
Interesting. And I'm sure you know this, but why that 17-18% flip year to year?
It's all military.
Oh, okay.
It's all military, right? So you're losing some of it. You have these loyal customers for 10 years, and they're like, I'm like, where are you going? Oh, we're moving. We're going to, you know, UK, or we're going to France, and they're going to NATO, and so they're constantly moving out. So, but it's kind of fun. I get all these new people, and then it's really keeps you on your toes.
That's cool. And talk to me about the idea of running a business, whether in New Jersey or Virginia Beach. Are there similarities, differences in terms of, you know, the nuts and bolts of running a business in different areas? I'm curious about that because I can imagine, you know, as you know, people in Northeast are very different from people in Virginia or South Carolina or Florida. Is there any differences in the way you work internally when you're in different areas?
I'll tell you, I moved to Virginia Beach and I love it. Don't get me wrong. I love living here. I love being part of this community, but being from Jersey and up north gave me a huge advantage when I moved here. You know, working at the speed we do up there, it's so hyper-competitive. When I was making pizza up in Jersey, I had six guys behind me that wanted my job at all times, and I had to be the best at what I did. So when I came down here, everybody's a little more laid back, and it's really awesome, but it gave me a huge advantage in business. But the funny thing is I go back to Jersey now, I'm like, God, everybody's so rude up here. Like, you know, the people are super nice down here, very friendly, and it's a great environment to do business. It's been a great place to raise my three daughters, and so it's been really cool, but definitely some big advantage. When you're up north, it's no joke. I mean, I have buddies that was here, worked for me as a kid. He moved to Brooklyn. He owns two restaurants in Brooklyn. He goes, that was a huge learning curve for me. He goes, I didn't realize the intensity up here, and that's what it is. It's just, it's way more intense.
And did you have to... You talked about the fact that the pace is a little different. As a leader, did you have to adjust your dial a little bit when it came to dealing with people down here as well?
Oh, my God. It was so tough. Everybody thought I was crazy. I was hollering at people every day. But, you know, up north, they wouldn't blink an eye with that type of management style. That's just normal. Yeah. You know, down here, it's like, oh, my gosh, I have to be nice. I have to talk to you. And, like, you know, you couldn't, like, it really helped my management style, helped me understand what it meant to be in the people business, what it meant to really care for people. Up in Jersey, it's hard to explain. If you're not from there, I know that's where you're from, Joe, yeah. So you understand me better than anybody. But, you know, when your boss asks you to do something, you don't look at him cross. You don't walk into the room when he's in a room. You just do it. But it's made me a better man, a better manager, and a better business owner, everything. It's really helped my career.
And it's obvious that you're a serial entrepreneur and just don't do restaurants. You mentioned construction and other things. When it comes to being a serial entrepreneur, I never understood you people. Like, to me, entrepreneurship seems really hard, but to do it in different verticals seems like it's crazy. What was it that attracted you to serial entrepreneurship? It obviously, Tony, you've got a pretty short attention span. Like, you like to move around a little bit. I get it. But what was it about, like, being able to dip your toe in different things instead of just staying in the thing that you did really, really well? Why did you feel like, hey, let me try to do something really well in another business?
Here's the crazy part. Being a serial entrepreneur, you just don't really think about it. You know, you just kind of do it. So I open a restaurant, I start, you know, I get $50,000, I go buy a house. All of a sudden, now I'm in the real estate business. I end up with 20, 30 homes. And then all of a sudden, like I'm building in homes. I'm starting to do tile work. I'm starting to redo the kitchens. And then a couple customers come in and say, hey, can you help me with my kitchen? Can you help me with my bathroom? I'm like, sure. So I start doing that for 5, 6 years. I'm like, I need to get paid to do this. And then bang, I start a construction company. And then all of a sudden, I get frustrated at work with all the employees. And I say, gosh, I can't stand these employees. I keep telling the same employees the same thing over and over again. So what do? I start an entire training company that I'm going to take through the franchising world. And then the pandemic hits and I'm like, you know, I can't stand this pricing. You know, we're raising our prices. I'm having to print new menus every other week. It's crazy. Now I got these stupid QR codes on every table, people using their phone. So I start a whole thing, another SaaS company with dynamic pricing, which is going to change the entire industry. So everything I do just happens for reasons. I'm I build businesses out of friction most of the time. So if there's friction or there's something wrong in an area, I'm saying I can solve that problem. And I guess as a serial entrepreneur, I've always believed if another human being can do it, I can do it. But it's not to say like, hey, I can do accounting. I'm also smart enough to say that's not my wheelhouse. You know, so it's not like I build businesses just because I think I can do everything. I build businesses that are relative to what I'm doing, and they all complement each other.
And it's interesting too, because it sounds like a lot of your businesses, Tony, they've almost had like this sort of domino effect where one business led to the other. It's not like you were randomly picking, I want to do this all of a sudden. It's just they all
kind of— I'm going to open a flower shop.
So, and I feel like that's important to you, right? Because you felt like these friction points along the way were like, okay, I came to this, but I feel like there's something I could fix there, right?
100%. Yeah. And it's like, you know, it's also people. Like, people have a need. I moved from Jersey. You'll love this. I come down and open up a restaurant, Why Not Italian? And I open up and the bread's terrible here. Horrible. Like, everybody had hot dog rolls. And they're like, I'm like, you guys don't even have bread. So I hire Sicilian bakeries working in the back of my restaurant. And bang, what do? I open up a full-scale wholesale bakery delivering the entire state of Virginia. But I didn't open that bakery because I said, I want to be a baker. I opened the bakery because I had a need. And that's how all of my businesses have been created. Mm-hmm. And as a serial entrepreneur, like, I think I'm always thinking solutions, right? So when you're a solution-driven person, you're constantly thinking about how can I solve problems? And that in turn caused me to found 32 different companies.
And it sounds like just through this conversation, delegation is a big part of your success. You don't want to do everything. And I've always been the person who's like, I hate delegating. I'd rather just do everything myself. When did you realize that delegation was going to be the key to not only being a successful entrepreneur, but being a successful serial entrepreneur?
You know, the beauty of starting out in the restaurant business, you know, I realized delegation from the first day I opened my business, because I unlocked the door and it was my wife and I standing in there, and all of a sudden we had 10 customers walking. I'm like, hell, I need employees. So from day one, I learned delegation from, but to be honest with you, Joe, I didn't perfect delegation. So delegation, I call it the art of delegation, and delegation is probably the one thing that will help you scale faster than anything. It's truly understanding how to manage people, right? Setting proper expectations. But the biggest mistake people make in delegation is when somebody's delegating something, they don't criticize themselves. Did you find the right person? Did you give them the right task? Did you set the right expectation? But that follow through, they always criticize the employee. And my bosses up in the north, man, I was criticized all the time. Yeah, did it make me a better employee? Did it make me not like my bosses and make me work harder? For sure. But delegation, really understanding the art of it, is a key part to scaling your business. And delegation is critically important, because I can't do what I do without people. People are like, oh my God, how do you run 18 different companies? I said, I delegate really, really well. Like, I'm sitting with you today, Joe. My companies are all running. I have C-suite, I have head of operations, head of director of marketing, all over, project managers in construction. I have people working on my SaaS companies everywhere. So it's really about empowering people and trusting them. Trust is so critically important as well.
Boy, I mean, I don't know how you do it. I would have trouble trusting one person, but to trust bodies of groups of people across 18 companies seems like a lot. And when people, you know, you do certain things well, do you sometimes feel like you have to infringe your, you know, known skill set or your experience on these people you're delegating? How do you navigate that fine line when you're delegating something that you could probably do and have a way of doing it, but this person does it differently?
So I'm going to give you an analogy. Like, you know, like, so I perform extremely well, Joe, from 30 to 50,000 feet. when I get brought down into 10,000 feet, I'm like, okay, there's friction. So I start creating solutions, process. I systemize my systems. But being brought down to that 10,000 feet as I get older is daunting for me. It's tough, right? So, but what has happened is by bringing me down to that 10,000 feet, I'm creating much better system, much better processes that, because I don't want to go back down there. Mm-hmm. I like living up in that 30 to 50,000 feet. But, you know, that's where you start to understand what delegation means. If you're stuck at that 10,000 feet, you need to start investing in your people, start delegating, taking the time to create systems, processes, and procedures to make your company great.
But you, Tony, can only live in that 30 to 50,000 feet area because you have trusted people that you've delegated to. That, you know, that's the hard part, I think, right?
Yeah. Because, I mean, like, I used to make pizza, Joe. I was the fastest pizza man in the world in 94. And I thought I was the greatest pizza man in the world. Nobody can make pizza like me. I have to make every pizza in my restaurant. This was when I was a young man. I thought I was the greatest. I was so cocky coming out of Jersey. But, you know, my business wasn't growing. And it wasn't until I took that apron off that I really started to realize all my businesses, how to grow my businesses, because I started working on them. And I love having my hands, like even I drive an F-350, Joe, I'm in the construction business. I don't have a tool in my pickup truck. Everybody's like, why do you have an F-350? I'm like, yeah, just in case I need to pick up a few pallets because I need something that can hold some weight. But the second I took my tools out of my truck, my construction business started growing. I built huge homes, 15,000 square foot homes, all concrete. But, you know, it wasn't, I know how to delegate. I know how to run a business. And that's the problem with contractors. You know, they have all their tools in their truck. So they're in the job, they're laying concrete, they're pouring a pad, and they're not making money because they're the one doing it.
How are those pizza skills? Are they like riding a bike? If you went to make a pizza tomorrow, would you be able to do it?
Yeah, hell yeah, Joe. Like when you make pizza for 40 years, you don't forget. You know, all my guys, like it's funny the other night, I'm in the restaurant just coaching, teaching, training. Like the one guy's like, you don't know how to cook. I'm like, get out of my way. But I mean, so it's like these, it's in your bones. And I have a pizza oven in my house now. So I mean, it's kind of cool. So I make pizza at home on Saturdays and Sundays.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, hopefully you're not making any of that tuna around the house, right? Because I don't want you getting angry around the family. have like your family come by like, Tony, this doesn't feel like ahi tuna. Are you sure this is ahi tuna?
Hey, I cooked ahi tuna in my wood-fired oven last week. It was badass. So.
Oh, nice. I bet. All right. His name is Tony DiSilvestro. His upcoming podcast is called Tony D Talks. We're looking forward to it, Tony. Good luck, and we cannot wait to see what company number 19 and 20 are going to be.
Awesome, Joe. I appreciate it, buddy. We'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. To find out more about Tony, go to TonyDiSilvestro.com. And that wraps up another Forbes Books podcast. If you enjoyed the show, make sure you take a second to subscribe so you automatically get new shows when they drop. Also, if you have a minute, I'd love if you left us a review so more amazing entrepreneurs like yourself can discover the show. And please don't forget the golden rule and treat others as you want to be treated. Thanks for listening. Until next time, adios.